Two-Way Talk here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And I'm Carol Williams.
It's Friday, so you know we have Friday News Roundtable, and our guests are already on the line with us. Before we go into the News Roundtable, let me pay tribute to Ted Venatoulis, the county executive of Baltimore County many years ago. He was one of my colleagues on Square Off. He died suddenly this week. He took over Baltimore County government after it was riddled with scandal, and he ran against the Democratic establishment, won, and really turned Baltimore County around. He was probably one of the nicest men that I knew. He died, like I said, suddenly this week. Tributes coming out of everywhere for Ted Venatoulis. He was a great man, and he will be missed. He will be missed. It's Friday. As I said, it's the News Roundtable. Hassan Giordano is back. Owner of DMV Daily Media, media buyer, TV, radio, podcast, live stream host, communications consultant, political strategist, Hassan Giordano. Welcome back. We missed you.
I'm back. Hey. I missed y'all too, man. I didn't miss Baltimore. No, I would rather be right down in Orlando still.
Now,
it's always good to be on the show.
Now, were there long lines where you were? Did you go to Disneyland?
We did, but I stayed in a at a resort.
Oh, nice.
Calypso Cay
resort. So we know who's making the moolah.
Yeah.
It was a nice day. Look, they had a Halloween thing.
Oh, nice.
At Universal Studios that we went to at nighttime.
Wow.
Dark. And then during the daytime, we came back and went to Hollywood Studios. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you something, though. You better have some moolah.
Yeah. I'm telling you.
Messing with Disney World. Mm-hmm. That's people going to play. That's a lot of money.
Everything from sodas being $5 or $6.
Or more. Yes.
It's very expensive.
$100-some a ticket.
Just to get in, yeah.
Per ticket, just to get in.
Now, I'm going to admit that I've been twice. Went with my parents who took all of their grandchildren, and I said, you got to take me, too. And it was a blast, but I remember everything being overly expensive.
Priced, yeah.
Joining us on the News Roundtable, our new friend Mark McLaurin, who is the Senior Vice President for Campaigns at the 1833 Group. He is one of the political gurus people seek all over the country. Mark McLaurin, welcome to Two-Way Talk.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me back. Hello, Hassan. Hello, Kara.
Hello. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Good.
Now, Mark, I will ask you if you've been on vacation. I know you've been working hard trying to get...
Actually,
wait a minute. That's right. You just got back from the Dominican Republic. I'm telling you, I'm in the wrong business. I need to hang out with you guys.
You got that right.
I use those EBT benefits work too. Thank you.
That's right. Mark, you're crazy. Folks, we're going to be talking a lot about Democratic politics, Republican politics. We're going to be talking about violence in the city of Baltimore today on the News Roundtable. Let me kick this off. I want to ask you all, is Joe Biden in trouble? I sent you all a clip, the reporter Cup, who's a host on CNN, just berated him for allowing Donald Trump to be setting the political agenda. She believes the Democrats have missed so many points from the infrastructure legislation, debt ceiling legislation, to everything else. She also said that, look, Kamala Harris has no agenda. For anybody who was expecting her to have an agenda, her agenda is Joe Biden's agenda, and she better not step out of that. Yeah. It's fascinating to me. People are already writing off Hassan Giordano, the Joe Biden administration.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they've written them off. I think those who supported him still support him. They're just worried that he's not doing enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those who were on the fence, like myself, have already kind of written him off and said, well, I didn't expect too much out of old Joe anyway. And those who didn't like him aren't going to like him, period. He's doing nothing to to help his cause. And,
wow.
you know, Kamala is Kamala. I think she's just going along for the ride.
Of course.
You know, the consistent rumors that come out are this Joe's a one-term president,
mm-hmm.
that either after the midterms he's going to resign and then Kamala will become president, which, interesting enough, if that is done in that capacity, then we would see something like Nixon, how he was going to choose Spiro Agnew,
yes.
who subsequently got indicted and then chose Gerald Ford.
Yep.
But then you kick in the 25th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, but the Senate has to confirm any choice,
mm.
and by it being a 50-50 split, it might not be 50-50
That's
after
right.
the midterm. They might have to wait till the entire four-year term is done, then Kamala becomes the nominee, which to me, Kamala's weaker than Joe is right now, which is sad.
Interesting. Mark McClellan, give me your assessment of your Democratic leaders seem to be in trouble.
Well, I love my party, but we are the bedwetter party. and so we are consistently and constantly feeling like we're in peril. Look, these are very difficult times. We're coming out of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in many respects, like S.E. Cupp, who's conservative commentator.
Yes.
There seems to be this this feeling of, well, why doesn't Biden do something? But he has a very closely divided Congress, and as I said, we've got the bedwetter caucus in the Democratic Party that won't move forward with needed reforms and
mm-hmm.
with needed. I mean, the opportunities on this infrastructure legislation and on this human services legislation. This has the potential to be transformational.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what Biden's voters want is for Biden to drive forward with an ambitious agenda,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not be, you know, not take half measures in hopes that we're going to attract some phantom moderates to our cause.
Mm.
You know, what people that voted for Biden wanted was change, and they want it now. And I have to say, we talked about Kamala last time, but I think Kamala gets such a bad rap. No vice president has an agenda. what was the Mike Pence agenda? Nobody knows what it was. So 6 months in, you know, like, as I said, the job of the vice president is to inquire daily as to the health of the president. and I think, lastly, she the idea that, look, I was 14 years old going to New Hampshire for Joe Biden in 1988. Anyone that thinks that Joseph Robinette Biden has been running for president for 30 years is planning to step down after 2 years and hand it off to someone else.
Right.
It's not a very good student of who Joe Biden is.
Mm.
Joe Biden is going to be there as long as his health allows, and I hope he is.
So, Mark.
Exactly. Long as his health allows. Will it even allow him to get through the end of his years? The question.
Uh-oh. Mm. So, Mark, April Ryan, the very well-known former Morgan grad, says that she wants to know what Kamala Harris's black agenda is.
Mm.
And she's trying to figure out why Kamala hasn't come out with a black agenda. Go ahead, Karen.
No, I would agree with mm-hmm. what you were just saying and what April Ryan said. I was just getting ready to say that when she was running for vice president or when she was elected vice president or whatever, she had an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
She had a black agenda, and now she's just silent. She's not saying anything. She's not getting, like you said, getting in Biden's way with
mm-hmm.
anything. She's just kind of being real quiet. And yeah, I would agree
but
with
you know
Ryan.
The interesting thing is, Mark said no vice president does that.
Mm-mm.
I mean, they really don't. But it's exceptional to me that people have these expectations of Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very different expectation of her than we had of, I won't even run the list down of boring vice presidents we've had. But Kamala Harris, the expectations were high, and she is falling woefully short.
She sold that. That's how she sold herself.
Mm-hmm. Hassan Giordano, are we expecting too much of Kamala Harris?
Yeah, I think, yeah, especially for a black agenda, yes.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris is no Sheila Dixon. She's no Adrian Jones. You won't see any black agendas being touted in the White House. And even if she did have one,
mm-hmm.
you can best believe the Biden folks are saying, you better tamp that down.
That's right.
And, mm-hmm. You know, again, you know, Mark makes a good point about vice presidents. We have saw at least some visible vice presidents, not policy related.
Uh-huh.
Right? They're not these big policy wonks or anything. You know, they have at least are more visible. It's almost like the media, one, characterizes Kamala unfairly and puts her in a box because she's a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to be honest about that. But number two is because Joe Biden is so lackluster that they're hoping for somebody else to kind of step in and say, hey, you know, here's what we're doing. Here's what we're going to do. And I think both of them are just piss poor representatives at this point of the Democratic Party.
But, Mark, is Joe Biden lackluster? I mean,
Hassan has already admitted that he was not on the Biden train. Joe Biden is never going to set any awards for being the most charismatic politician.
No, of course not.
I'll tell you what. He works hard, he knows the issues, and he is committed to a vision of a country that we can all get behind and stand behind. And that at the end of the day, is what's important. I really feel like the criticisms of Kamala are rooted in misogyny. That same old thing that rears its ugly head. Nobody asked Anthony Brown where was his black agenda for Martin O'Malley. You know, what happens here is that women get measured by a different yardstick, and especially black women. She is an accomplished woman in her own right, but as the vice president, her job is to push the president's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
She does not have a separate, you know, center of universe. And so probably most of the advocacy that she does is, and rightfully so, behind the scenes.
Mm.
She's in the room when the decisions are made, pushing in the right direction. And let's remember, they've been there for 8 months. You know what I mean? Like, what exactly
good point. Good point.
She could have done between here and there.
And remember now, she was the attorney general for the state of California. She was the U.S. senator for the state of California, the biggest state in the country. She was elected statewide to two very important offices. She is not lackluster by far.
She didn't do jack when she was the senator for California.
No.
And when she was state's attorney, she didn't do nothing but lock a bunch of black people up. If that looked like a agenda, then boy, God, I don't want it.
Oof.
It's a rewrite of history. Brought it to revisionist history hour.
Folks,
No, ain't no revisionist. That was brought up during the presidential election.
It was.
About her policies towards blacks. As state's attorney. Now, she may have done one or two things as U.S. attorney, but if you could please remind me, I would gladly take that refresher course, but I don't remember any.
The attorney general's role in California is not primarily criminal justice. If you're talking about when she was the DA of San Francisco, she brought progressive initiatives that had never been had in San Francisco. She's far from perfect. But she revolutionized that office in a way that
Up a lot of black people than
so,
a president.
Before we get too distracted by Kamala Harris, I do want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. Are you disappointed in the Democratic agenda? Are you disappointed? It's been 8 months. Very good point, Mark. It's been 8 months. But I think a lot of people expected extraordinary change.
Mm-hmm.
From the Donald Trump years, and had great expectations of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. What do you think about the Democratic agenda? 410-319-8888. Give us a call. Join our conversation. Hassan Giordano is back in his rightful place right over here at the News Roundtable, along with Mark McLaurin, the Senior Vice President for Campaigns at the 1833 Group. We want to hear from you. Give us a call. Join the conversation. Lest we go through a whole show and not talk about Donald Trump. The Senate, 11 Republicans joined the entire Democratic elected class of the Senate and raised the debt ceiling. Donald Trump called, he lobbied, he told the Senate Republicans, do not go along with the Democrats. 11 of them, including leader Mitch McConnell, went along and voted to raise the debt ceiling. Has he finally lost his hold on the Senate Democrats? Hassan Giordano?
Hell no. Ooh, let me tell you something. Trump may remain popular amongst conservatives across the country, and especially House members who are in majority Republican districts, remind you, like Maryland's 1st District. With Andy Harris.
So
that one's even getting a little bit more purple.
Not for long.
Many of them who voted for the procedural vote, mind you, known as closure,
that's right.
They actually voted against it during the final vote, but they voted for closure because they're
knowing that it would push its way through, though, right?
Right, but mm-hmm. they're in less conservative majority states, known as purple states to many, and they got to run for re-election. And they realize that the voters in their district aren't going for the campaign slogan. Trump told me so.
That's right.
Right, so they can't get away with doing that. And I honestly think McConnell has something up his sleeve.
I do too.
Actually,
I do too.
Effort. At first, remember, he was saying, we ain't voting for
We're not going to do
stuff.
This at all.
Then he, all of a sudden, he says, all right, he finally scrapes up the 11 votes necessary to ensure that there wasn't going to be a filibuster. But, mind you, this is only $480 billion. Like, that's a little bit of money. That lasts only until December
3rd. December 13th, I think.
Right. And so we're going to be talking about this all over again, but I think at that point, that's when McConnell's going to stick the knife in Democrats' back.
Wow. Mark McLaurin, give me your thought on the Republicans siding with the Democrats, allowing the debt ceiling to be raised.
If I had a dollar for every article that was written questioning, has Donald Trump finally lost his hold on the Republican Party, I wouldn't be on this show because I'd still be in the Dominican Republic, okay? Donald Trump's hold on the Republican Party is lasting, and I think until he goes up the great Chili Jordan, it's going to be so. Republicans are scared of Donald Trump, but Mitch McConnell, I think to his credit, even though he, you know, I don't give him credit for anything on the good side of the ledger, but he is a smart political strategist, and he knew that for this country to default on the debt at this point, with Republicans so clearly getting the blame, would have been disastrous for their electoral processes. And so he gathered them all together and said, okay, which 11 of you are coming with us down this road? We cannot default on the debt ceiling. And if you'll recall, how many of the 11 are up in 2022?
Mm.
One of them.
Just one. That's right.
And that's Lisa Murkowski, who's already burnt her bridges with Trump. Yeah. But everyone else, these are all folks that are not up for re-election. And so McConnell chose those folks to be the ones to walk the plank on this for the greater good of the Republican Party.
Mm.
Mitch keeps saving the Republicans from themselves with regards to Donald Trump.
I agree. And I think Hassan is on to something. I think Mitch McConnell is playing a game here because he was so adamant. And the president and all these other high-profile, George Bush, Bob Dole, all these high-profile Republicans were urging the Senate, look, we took blame when we went against the debt ceiling. We told Democrats, you've got to stick with us, raise the debt ceiling, and they did it. Mitch McConnell changed his tune. And I was like, something is up. Mm-hmm. Something is up.
This is where Joe Biden doesn't get the credit he deserves. Uh-oh. All of that tough talk and bluster from McConnell was about trying to make Biden blink.
Uh-huh.
And to his credit, Biden did not blink. He said, well, if we're going to default, let's default together. You know? And so finally McConnell said, well, wait a minute. Like, I'm playing chicken, but I'm the only one who doesn't have a seatbelt on.
Mm.
And so I think those are the untold stories of Biden is a legendary Washington player, and I think he played Mitch McConnell this time.
Wow.
And I think he'll play him again in December.
I
think McConnell's going to play him in December, and you're going to see Republicans. Now, it could take a change, but I'm going with McConnell. But it is easier for Trump and them and these so-called conservatives to sit on the sidelines,
mm-hmm.
being rich, saying, oh, yeah, shut the government down. Not
That's right.
What that means
right.
for America,
mm-hmm.
let alone the politics of his party. But his party should realize how reckless he is. He's been reckless for 4 years, and, you know, he's trying to buy these people into it. And it's going to be interesting to see, but I honestly think McConnell has the upper hand on this one.
So, folks, we have some callers on the line. Let's go to James. James, thanks for calling Two-Way Talk. Welcome.
How you doing, family?
Doing well. James, I'm going to ask you to turn your radio down because there's a delay. And so we'll hear us in the background talking.
Okay. Yes, I'm good now?
Yes, sir. You are. Always good.
Okay. Here's my take. Now, Republican or Democrat, for everyone always seem to have a specific gimmick that they campaign on.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get that in, That's usually how they win. And once they uphold whatever they campaign on, it's pretty much nothing else for them to do.
Wow.
For Biden, it was the stimulus check. Mm. I don't think nothing else comes after that.
Mm.
I don't believe they'll allow him to do anything else after that. There'll just be three more years left, and then we got to fight to see who's next.
Mm.
And it's always the same thing. I'm 66 years old. I've never seen a change since I've been voting.
Wow.
Never seen a change.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been, and in 66 years, it seems like it's always the same issues. Do they ever get solved?
Thank you.
James.
You know, it's like a person having a reprobate mind.
James, thank you for your call. Hassan Giordano's with us. Mark McLaurin is in the house with us. Kara and I need to take a very quick break. You're listening to Two Way Talk. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Two-Way Talk on Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, absolutely, absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
I'm Kara Williams.
And it's Friday, so you know on Fridays we have the News Roundtable. Hassan Giordano's back after his short stint traveling the country and having fun instead of being here with us. Hassan is the owner of DMV Daily Media. He's a well-known TV, radio, podcast, live stream host, communications consultant, political strategist. Mark McLaurin is in the house with us, the senior vice president for campaigns at the 1833 Group. He is advising some of the most competitive campaigns in the country right now. Mark McLaurin, Hassan Giordano, great to have you back on Two-Way Talk.
Great to be back.
So we were talking about Donald Trump and the Republicans. One of the other things that's very telling about the state of Democratic politics, Joe Manchin and the senator from Arizona, recent poll numbers show that their polls are off the hook. Their states, which are not blue, love that their two senators are standing up, challenging the spending of the Democratic administration. Hassan, Joe Manchin doesn't want to do anything but be the senator from West Virginia, right?
I would think so. And that's what he seems to be worried. It was interesting you say that about this, because I was doing a show earlier in the week, and we talked about the poll numbers that come out of West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And when it comes to whether it's the voting rights bill, 57% of Virginians, West Virginians, and 68% of Manchin supporters believe that he should stand firm on voting against the voting rights bill. They don't believe that it should be a national bill telling them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to him holding his principle against the filibuster and not weakening the filibuster, 61% of West Virginians and 74% of Manchin supporters believe that he should not cave in to weaken the filibuster. And it goes on and on and on. So when you look at the numbers from West Virginia, that all emboldens and empowers Manchin. Now, I haven't seen Chris Sinema's numbers, but I saw the numbers out of West Virginia, and that, again, that does not do any service for the Democratic Party or for the Senate majority when they're trying to garner as many Democratic votes as necessary coming up in the next 12 months.
Mark McLaurin, let me ask you, Kristen Sinema, the senator from Arizona, has been criticized by progressives who say essentially she's been silent and non-existent in the United States Senate until she stood up to challenge Biden and the infrastructure bill. Who's right and who's wrong?
Well, I mean, it's really frustrating. Now, Joe Manchin, I'll give a pass because West Virginia is a ruby red state.
Mm-hmm.
The polling data that Hassan read off from West Virginia is just par for the course.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, ironically, the idea that West Virginians who, you know, survive off of a diet of, you know, Mountain Dew and
hot dogs
are the idea that they're against more government spending to help poor people is just blows my mind. But be that what it is, West Virginia is with Trump, and they anytime Joe Manchin appears to be standing up to Joe Biden and putting his thumb in his eye, they support that because I think that they voted for Trump over Biden by at least 20 or 25 points. So that's no surprise. But now Kyrsten Sinema is another case. I think that she is in a you know, it was the closest state in the nation last cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she thinks that it plays well for her to cater to this mythic moderate middle of folks that switch back and forth in voting for parties, and if she's seen as like kind of the reasonable accommodationist center, that's her greatest path for reelection.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to think that she's wrong, because I think that most times, once you dispirit your base, you know, like the base in Arizona is made up of, you know, black and brown and poor people, mm-hmm. who are not amused with her playing games against additional spending. And the difficult part of it for Kyrsten Sinema from the perspective of progressives is that she knows better. In her mind, she is actually a progressive. She was elected, I mean, she got elected as a bisexual woman in Arizona. You know, she is a former member of the Green Party, you know.
Oh, wow.
She knows very well what the right thing to do is. And so the fact that she is positioning herself in this way is so politically craven that it sticks in progressives' craw in a way that it doesn't for Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin is trying to manage his state's rightward lean and his own status as a Democrat, and so he gets a lot of slack. Kyrsten Sinema does not get the same slack because she knows better, and she's not in that difficult a state.
Mm.
And Anthony, don't fall off your seat, but this may be the one time that I'm going to agree with Mark.
I'm telling you.
Politically, she is absolutely wrong in her assessment. Like you said, she ran as a progressive. She won that state as a progressive.
Mm-hmm.
They put her in that seat. Point blank, period. You do not run away from your base.
Mm.
That's exactly what she's saying.
This is going to be very interesting. I want to invite our callers to join our conversation. Hassan and Mark light it up every time they are on our show.
Yes, they do.
So call in and tell us what you think about the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Do you think Donald Trump has a firm hold on the future of the Republican Party? Do you think Democrats are already in trouble 8 months out? The midterm elections are coming, and people are predicting the Democrats will lose both chambers of the U.S. Congress. We want to hear from you at 410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones. Fred is on the line. Fred, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hello?
Hey there, you're on the air.
Okay, great. The Democratic Party lost me back in the day when George Bush Jr. was running and the Chad vote came up. Man, that was crazy. And then also during that period of time when Colin Powell came and said that weapons of mass destruction and Cynthia McKenna was the only Democrat, the only person of color, the only woman that said, I don't see it, and she's persona non grata from there. Let's move it up a little further. A little further down to Bush, not Bush, but Biden. So under this administration, my goodness, I mean, one of the first things out of the, when they got in the office first month, second, third month, what have you, they sided with Israel against the Palestinians and really pushed them to the side out of the conversation. So I don't have any expectation that, really, I'm the kind of guy that says, like Malcolm X said, right wing, left wing, don't matter what side of the bird it is both the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. 410-319-8888 is the number if you'd like to join our conversation. Hassan, Mark, either one of you have anything? Carol, you have anything to add to what Fred said?
Left wing, white wing, is part of the same bird.
I think you said it much more eloquently. Go ahead, Hassan.
I have to take issue.
The idea
that when you see the vast disparities in terms of what Democrats' vision is for the country and what Republicans' vision is for the country, if you can look at that picture and say,
six of one, half dozen of the other. Mm-hmm. You need to get your eyes checked, brother. You know, you need to get your eyes checked. They are very different things. That's not to say that the Democrats are perfect or that the Republicans are all bad. But of everything that's important to working class people, to black folks, to brown folks, on issue after issue after issue, I mean, I keep touting this. Biden's proposal on the earned income tax credit has the potential to transform communities.
It really does.
Mm-hmm. And to say that, well, that versus Republicans' idea of shutting down the earned income tax credit and giving more money to millionaires, to say that the difference between those two visions of the world is negligible or just about the same, it's just crazy to me. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Well, that. Let me take, because I don't think the brother, if I'm accurate in his assessment, in Malcolm, understanding Malcolm, because he was my hero, he was who I grew up with in the 5% nation, understanding that it's not comparable, we're not comparing the parties. What it is both Democrat and Republicans are running a game on America, and neither party represents the interests of true average black citizens, and that's why I've always been an independent.
You
I've
sure have.
A Democrat when I need to vote for somebody like Sheila Dixon in the Democratic Party, because look, the primaries in this town are the general. But I've always been an independent from day one because I knew, understanding the politics of this town and the country, that Democrats and Republicans play this game back and forth, and then they're both sitting back in the back room, paid. Laughing at with each other, going out to drink with each other while the country suffers, but they don't. And so I think that's what Malcolm and a lot of people in this country feel is the party system is broken altogether because it's a sham, and we need something different.
Folks, we want to hear from you. Join the two-way conversation. Hassan Giordano, Mark McLaurin, and Kara and I are having our Friday roundtable, 410-319-8888, if you have something to add to the conversation. Mark McLaurin, this week a massive shooting took place in East Baltimore. And I hesitate to say this. We have gotten so used to shootings in this city, it's barely a blip on the radar screen. Mm-hmm. But Antonio Glover, a councilman on the Baltimore City Council, wrote a really interesting letter to his constituents saying that we have to take control of violence in our neighborhoods, that we have got to, if we want to, we have got to run these violent offenders out of our communities. We got to turn them in. We've got to make sure people know who's doing the dirt in our neighborhoods. I use the word purge. Can we purge violent offenders from our communities? Mark McLaurin, is the answer still obviously no? We can't win against these violent offenders.
Well, I think that we do a disservice to the community when we set this up as some either or proposition.
Yeah, very true.
Either you're for crime prevention and youth diversion and, you know, and drug treatment, and either you're for those things or you're for, you know, indiscriminate stop and frisk and lock them all up. I think that there is a carrot and stick approach. But I will say this: the fact that Antonio Glover came out with, out of the 14 members of the Baltimore City Council, if there is one member who has his ear to the streets in his community, it is Antonio Glover.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Tony is getting out in front on this issue and expressing the real frustration with the level of non-prosecution of, and in my experience, he's talking about repeat violent offenders.
Repeat violent offenders. That's right. Who are doing the crime. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's give you a break. But if you, you know, over and over and over again, it's these same folks. Yes, I mean, I think our communities are finally getting to the point where, you know, I'm sorry it's your grandson, Miss Hattie, but he done shot up this block four times. He's got to go. And when we get to that level of recognition in our communities, I think it's a good thing. And the fact that someone like Tony is leading the charge is a positive development in this system.
Hassan Giordano, give me your assessment. How can we, giving, and you don't have to even pay attention to what I'm saying about this, the prosecutor has said we need to change the way we prosecute in the city. But she's never said, we're not going to prosecute repeat violent offenders. She gets a bad rap on that a lot. But what can we do about the violence, the level of violence, over and over again in some of our communities?
Well, we're not going to address the systematic issues plaguing our city's neighborhoods by passing plastic bag bans.
Ooh.
That's what you're not going to do. And that seems to be all that we're getting from this current city council. Mind you, this is this new, young, so-called progressively hungry group of elected folks that we elected, and yet we don't seem to see any movement or progress from this council. I'm glad to see Antonio out on front of this and actually talking about issues that the community actually cares about,
mm-hmm.
right? Because, look, anybody who knows the street level on these council members, they know that Antonio's out there. He's one of the problems, like Mark said,
mm-hmm.
out in the street, understand that. And until we get more Antonio Glovers, more people like a Sheila Dixon, people respect the Sheila because she would go out in the street, she would take off her shoe and wave it at you, you know what I mean? All that, people laugh at it. But they felt the realness out of her, right? They understood.
People,
those repeat violent offenders respected her.
Mm.
They respect Antonio. And until you have those type of individuals out in the street talking to these people, offering them a different way, you can't ask them to stop selling drugs if you ain't giving them a different way to support, to meet their needs for their families. Now, I'm not trying to glorify what they do
or
justify it. But these people got to eat. Their families got to eat. So you got to be able to give them alternatives. And until we do that and start seeing real elected officials out in the streets instead of sitting down City Hall and tweeting about stuff and doing all this, but you don't never see them in the streets, then we're never going to change what we continuously see in the city day after day, and that is the violence and the killing of our young black brothers and sisters.
You were a police officer for 22 years mm-hmm. in the city, on the streets of this mm-hmm. very dangerous city. We've been talking about this for years,
yeah.
and there have been plans. I mean, honestly, Brandon Scott's come up with 5 plans. But is there any way that we can, the citizens can, push the legislators in our city to really get a handle on violence and repeat violent offenders?
I think it should be honestly begin with the courts. Once the violent offender is arrested, he shouldn't be let out.
Mm.
He's a violent offender. And it's probably not his first time, it's just his first time he's been caught. So I think the court is conveniently has too many cracks that these people are falling through, and then they come out on and they know how the court system runs, so they fall right into it and then they're let out again.
Mm.
So I think the courts needs to be know how serious these violent offenders are and what they will do if they're let out, and just keep them.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them. Don't let them down the charges down.
I want to hear from our listeners. Tell us what you think about the violence in our city. How can we address repeat violent offenders? A lot of people come up with plans. There's a lot of talk about it. But honestly, when Tay-Tay is paying Aunt Sally's BG&E bill, you're not going to hear her complaining.
Yeah.
You're not going to. And therefore, she's not complaining about mm-hmm. what's going on in her neighborhood
yeah.
and in her community.
Yeah.
And I know it's not that simple. It really isn't. It's deep and it's complicated. But we want to hear from you. 410-319-8888. Donna is on the line from Baltimore. Donna, welcome to Two Way Talk.
How you doing, everybody?
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah, two things, mm-hmm. and you know I'm going to, I usually like to go deviate a little bit. when we look at crime, you know, and I hear all the politicians talk, I hear everybody, but we talk about reforming the police department and, you know, the things that are happening there, but we never talk about reforming the social service system where
mm-hmm.
our children
mm-hmm.
are being raised in these dysfunctional homes. And the mothers, I mean, I've seen mothers participate and actually encourage their sons to go out on the street and sell drugs. So we have to really focus on the seed of where this crime starts. These kids are just not dropping out of the air and, you know, in a basket with a bottle in their mouth. I mean, they are coming from an environment where, they didn't ask to be put in this situation, be born into poverty, whatever. So we have to also reform the social service system and put these mothers on notice that they have a responsibility to raise these children and not just to have them and throw them out on the street. Mm. That's my first point. My second point, in reference to what you were talking about the Democratic Party and whatever, I'm wondering why we don't have a third party. I mean, why hasn't, they said that the last statistics I saw said that 75 to 80% of Americans now are independent. They got so frustrated with the Republican Party or the Democratic Party that they switched to just being independent. So why hasn't the Independent Party gotten together and formed themselves? I mean, Maryland did have an Independent Party, and then
they, mm-hmm.
they fell apart because the next group didn't take over. So if everybody's going to jump to become independent, why can't or why haven't we formed? And I heard, not Buttigieg, who was the somebody who ran for president? He just recently went independent. He jumped from the Democratic Party. And he moved to independent because he got frustrated with the Democratic Party. He said it wasn't moving in the direction. He was Asian, I think. He ran for president.
Yang.
He moved to. He just got fed up. So why haven't Yang and all of them said, let's create, establish an independent independent party? And I wanted to hang up and listen to your guest talk. Thank you.
Very interesting. Yeah. Martin McLaurin, give us your thought on what Donna shared with us.
I'm not going to have me back on if I keep taking issues with your callers. But what I will say to Ms. Donna is it astounds me that black women who have borne the brunt of all of this yet again get the blame for crime, too. Even though it's the hardhead boys that are in the street doing it. Mm. If you'll notice, Ms. Donna said, we need to get a hold of these mothers. What these mothers are raising, she didn't say a word about fathers.
Yeah.
Are they equally responsible? I mean, we throw this back on the mothers and what the mothers haven't done and what the, in my experience, I've seen too many heartbroken black women that did everything they could to bring their child through a very difficult situation. Still wind up having to go down to the jailhouse and visit him every 2 weeks in Western Maryland. Mm. And so I'm just not comfortable with this framework of we got to get the mothers. You know, well, the mother, if we got a problem in this community, it's with the fathers. And so the crime problem in this community, although increasingly girls are getting involved too, mostly the boys. And so if we've got a black male crime problem, the fact that people are calling into a radio show calling black women to account, black mothers to account, is just problematic. It's the misogyny that I can't listen to it, not speak on.
I certainly agree with you, Mark. But honestly, I think what she meant, and who am I to say, she meant we've got to start in the home.
Parents.
We've got to start in the home. That all this talk about what we do in the streets and reforming the police and our legislators aren't involved or don't want to touch it, all they care about is every 4 years they get more votes than the other person. But we've got to start teaching children in the home.
Yeah.
And honestly, we don't like to say that because we don't want to pass judgment on people's homes and how they raise their children. We hate to do it. Hassan Giordano, how can we say that without offending people? It starts with what we teach our children in the home.
We got to be real about it. I mean, I think every grown adult, black, white, or otherwise, understands that it starts in the home. The only people who act like it doesn't is the ones who are allowing their children. They're the ones who are responsible for the mess.
Yes.
That's the only one.
Yes, you're right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Any responsible man or woman understands that you are responsible for raising your child. Not the government, not the school. Mm-hmm. You first. Mm. You bring them to school to learn other things. But if you don't have a foundation, then it's going to crumble. It's just like a house. You've got to have a solid foundation with our children. The sad part is you can't always blame it on the parents. So, because in our communities especially, so many other factors play into it.
Yeah.
Whether it's drugs, whether it's debt. I mean, Think about how many people are shot, over 300 every year in Baltimore City for the past 6 years. Think about how many of them were mothers and fathers. So now those children are growing up without their actual parents. They're growing up with grandparents raising them or in the foster care system or whatever. Those grandparents can't handle those children when they're teenagers. So guess what? They're out there with no parental guidance. They're doing and influenced by other peers their age who are getting to gangs because they give them the love that they've been missing because their parents have been gone on drugs or dead. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. It's not just as simple and black and white as, oh, it's just the parents' fault. That's not always the case, but it does start in the home.
We have hit on something. The phone lines are full. The listeners want to jump into this conversation. Let's go to Karen. Karen's calling from Baltimore. Welcome to Two-Way Talk, Karen.
Good evening, everyone. And Kara and Anthony, thank you so much for this forum. This is the highlight of my week.
Oh, thank you.
My question pertains to the violence that Hassan was just talking about. Well, violence in the school system, because once we've understood that the system isn't working the way it should, and I guess I'm asking the question, where are the parents? How can we get the parents motivated to make sure that the system works the way it's supposed to, not just for their child, but the entire system? And I'll take my answer offline. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Karen. Very important question. I think they're exhausted. I think people who live in this city are exhausted by the, as Hassan said, 300 murders every single year. If we were to put that together over the next, I don't do math, but if we were to put that together over the last 6 years, that is a huge number of people we have lost as citizens of our city to gun violence and stabbings and violence in our city. It's a crazy, I think people are exhausted. I think you have to be exhausted to live in Baltimore. Anyway, Hassan, Mark, we have a bunch of callers. Go ahead.
I keep going back to the earned income tax credit, but what I will say is, once you reform the EITC and there's more, you know, like mothers and fathers aren't showing up at the PTA because they work two or three jobs to try and keep their family afloat. You know, recognize that not all parents don't show up because of apathy. A lot of parents don't show up because they're on second shift at Amazon.
Let's get to some of these other callers in. Dwayne's on the line. Dwayne, always great to hear from you. Welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, Anthony, look, I hear what you're saying about people being exhausted, but guess what? We can't afford to be exhausted.
You're right, brother.
We don't have that privilege. We cannot afford to be exhausted. We need our nose to the grindstone, building up our communities. That's what we need to do at all times. And as far as the politics are concerned, listen. Y'all probably can tell by many of my comments that I am not a Republican. I have no love for the Republicans because I judge a tree by the fruit that it bears. Okay? And so, you know, and look, you know, so with that being said, it's not, I don't even think really that we should be all caught up in do we like Republicans or do we like Democrats. We should be caught up in our nose to the ground style, building up our communities. And since the Democrats are giving us the most of the leeway to do that, that's where we should be leaning because the Republicans are just taking every chance they get. They're trying to take stuff away. So it's not about really liking Republicans or Democrats. It's all about, okay, listen, we need to be who's going to allow us to build the most. Okay, and it's not the Republicans or the Democrats' responsibility to build this stuff. That's one of our big problems. We keep waiting for the savior. We keep making jokes about that. We keep waiting for that savior to come and save us.
Dwayne, thank you. Dwayne was on point. He said, look, it's not the Democrats or the Republicans, although he has no love for Republicans.
Right.
He said, it's us. We got to put our nose to the grindstone. Stacy's on the line. We're running out of time, Stacy. Welcome to Two-Way Talk. Stacy? Oh, we lost her. Well, anyway, Hassan, Mark, we're up against the clock. They're telling me it's time to wrap up. Anything, Hassan, you have anything interesting coming on in the next couple of months that we need to know about?
Absolutely. So every Tuesday night, 6 p.m.
There it is.
8 p.m. Right after this show wraps up, go over to dmvdaily.news. Go to Facebook or YouTube, DMV Daily News. Watch us live. Me and former Mayor Sheila Dixon do our live stream and podcast. This Tuesday, we got Senator Cory McCrae, Delegate Carl Jackson on, talking about a lot of stuff we're talking about here. Thursday night, we're going to do a special 6 to 9. We're actually out at BWI Weston Hotel with the Black Caucus's gubernatorial forum. So all the candidates running for governor will be out there. You're going to want to hear them sit down with us. We're going to ask them the tough questions. So tune in to DMVDaily.news.
And that is hot. Mark McLaurin, what you got going on?
I love it. Well, nothing I can talk about on the radio. I'm advising my clients, and Hassan is going to have some great guests on in the next month that are my clients.
Uh-oh, good.
Stay tuned to DMV.
Stay tuned to DMV. Hassan Giordano, always great to have you. Mark McLaurin, you are extraordinary. Thanks for joining Kara and I today on the News Roundtable. We need to go to Amy for the MTA report, and then we're going to take a break.
Hey, thanks a lot. On light rail link, the work is continuing between Falls Road and Camden Yards. Allow extra time for your travel on.